following Compass presentation, taped live at a Stealing the Mind Bible Conference, is by Josh McDowell and is entitled Family, God's Way. For a complete listing of all Compass Bible teaching tapes, call 800-977-2177 or visit our website at www.compass.org.
Boy, get right among these flowers here. Oh, man, I always wondered what those things were you screwed on there. That's good enough. I guess it's not good enough. Thank you very much. You know, I better explain why I got NASCAR on. I just like it. Some woman came and said, "Why do you wear that?" I said, "I like it." She said, "I do too." You know how they got the name NASCAR? Guy came along and said, "NASCAR." Yep. Turn your minds on. We've heard a lot about truth last night. Today, I think every person here, Ed Hinson, Falwell, who didn't make it, Boone, Gino, Kent, Mark, Mike, Gerald, Dave Hunt, John, Chuck, Randall, Bob, Andy, every one of them is committed to truth. Every one of them is committed to truth. I would say probably the majority of you are here because you're committed. Oh, there's a crowd out there. You're committed to truth. You're concerned about your own children, your grandchildren, coming to the truth, knowing the truth. Many of you here looking out, you're concerned about your grandchildren. Boy, you got a right to be concerned. But what you're going to hear tonight is not what you expect. We are not losing our children to truth because they're not hearing truth. We're not losing our children to truth because they're not hearing the arguments to support truth. We're not losing our children to truth because it isn't being spoken. Basically, we are losing our children to truth because of the lack of relationships. Now, I know that flies in the face of a lot of you. But boy, it's a new day dawning and you better wake up. Your grandchildren won't be coming to Christ, or your own children. I want to make a statement. And if you read any of my books, when I make a statement, I usually document it and back it up. For the most part, now you think of your own children, your grandchildren, those attending evangelical, fundamental, born-again youth groups, kids, have always before said would be the churchgoers tomorrow and the leaders. That's not true anymore. It's the last 4 years. Our young people attending evangelical, fundamental, born-again youth groups today, except in a rare situation, will not be in church tomorrow. And I'm talking about your grandkids. They won't be in church tomorrow. All the research shows it. So how can you make that statement? I can make it because of this. I'll give you just a little bit of room. Whenever you want to see where young people are, self-revealing research is some of the finest, some of the most accurate. And if somebody said, what are several questions or one area of research that stays true longer than almost any other? I would say it's this. when over the years, for many, many, many years, they've asked this question, the same situation. When you leave home, in other words, university, military, work, or whatever, when you leave home, will God and the church play a part in your life? That's one of the most accurate questions asked. Historically, the lowest it's ever been is 50, the highest 66%, and it's always held true. You know what it is right now? 33% and falling rapidly. Now, whenever you ask one question, you have to tweak it and ask it a little different way to see if you're getting a true rendering. So you tweak the question this way. When you leave home, what part, not will God and the church play a part, but rather what part will God and the church play in your life? Historically, for those who are 20 to 29-year-olds, those who are 20 to 29, when they were 9 to 17, that question was answered. What part will God play was always number 2 and number 3, or number 3 and number 4. Always in the top 5. It's always been the top 5. You know what it is with now, 9 to 17-year-olds? Number 8 and number 11. That's some of the most accurate research ever of young people. When you find that evangelical fundamental young people will say of the adults in the church, 65% will say the adults are hypocrites. Highest ever. Now that's the reason that's such a challenge now more than ever before, even when it was down 30% or whatever, is that young people today process all truth through relationships, through experience. Now most of you won't grasp that, unless you spend hours talking to young people. They process their truth through experience. For you, if it's true, it'll work. For the majority of evangelical, fundamental, born-again Christian kids today, if it works, it's true. The exact opposite. Then when you see that kids learn through modeling, and today's, more than ever before, the models will determine the truth of the statements. For 9 to 17-year-olds, that's more true than any other time. And here's what we face. I was asked to come up to Iowa the Saturday night before the Monday caucus. And I was asked to address all the candidates at the largest political rally in Iowa. All the candidates had 5 minutes. I had 45. So I felt like I was going to get elected. I made this statement. Boy, you should have seen the heads snap from the news media. Everybody was there. I said, if you're concerned about family, youth, family values, don't elect an evangelical Christian to the White House. Do not. Bush and all just snapped their heads. I said, how can you say that? Because that's reality. Of evangelical, fundamental, born-again Christians, 27% are divorced. Of non-born-again unbelievers, 24%. When I first started to study the research, I said, wait, I got to be reading that. At least I pray to God I'm reading this wrong. So I called up the main group doing the research and I said, Dave, there's something wrong here. I'm reading this wrong. He said, what do you mean? I said, don't you mean here that someone became a Christian, they got divorced, and then they joined the church? And it was a long pause. He said, no. We checked that very carefully. It's people came to Christ, got involved in the church, and got divorced. You see, our kids are rejecting truth, not because of all the lack of arguments, everything else, but because of lack of relationships. I so appreciated what John did here. I thought it was excellent. I'm looking forward to seeing the whole video. He said there's 150 back there. No, there's only 149. I talked him into giving me one free. You're here, John. Do you hear that? No. It's so vital. But I'll tell you this. What Peter Jennings said on television fades away in comparison as impact in youth compared to the relationships with dad and mom and adult caregivers in the church. In comparison, the relationship of dad and mom is up here causing them to reject truth. Peter Jennings is down here. Now we need both. I was one of the first people called into Columbine. A year ago, April, I was asked to give the keynote address at the one-year anniversary by the parents of the children who were killed. I spent thousands of dollars evaluating, researching Columbine, the other 16 shootings called non-traditional shootings. And I concluded, and I got the whole list of everything, that everything, every analysis by Christian and non-Christians, partially right and partially wrong. I concluded every single Christian analysis I heard was partially wrong for this reason. You go back 2 years. What'd you hear in Christian television, Christian radio, pastors, evangelists, preachers, teachers, Bible scholars? The problem is a breakup of the home. The problem is divorce. The problem is single parenting. I disagree with that. 8 of the last 17 shooters came from intact families. After Columbine, Columbia University released their 5th annual study, a huge study. They wanted to see how family structure affected a child's involvement in drugs and alcohol. And the way the study was done, you could extrapolate it out to violence, etc. This is what they found. A child raised in a single-parent home where the mother's ahead is 30% more likely to go into drugs, alcohol, violence. Now, that's a huge percentage. But a child raised in a two-parent home where there's a fair to poor relationship with the father is 68% more likely. Over twice as likely. Get me, in a two-parent home where there's a fair to poor relationship with the father to go into drugs and alcohol and violence than in a single-parent home where the mother's the head. And I kept asking, what about a child in a two-parent home where there's a good action relationship with the father? Not one analysis, not one manual, not one study, anything. Newspaper, CNN, anyone reported that. And I said, no, wait a minute. You don't do a study like that. 3% plus or minus factor of error and not check that out. So I called Columbia University. They gave me the people, the commission to do the study. I called them. They emailed the study overnight to me. And I found out why they didn't include it. Because it's not politically correct. Basically, in education, it's taught the father is not important. How does a mother, how does a teacher stand up? You have a grade of 28 students, and maybe 22 of them don't even live with their original father. So how does a teacher stand up there, that's what they say, and say the father's important, the two-parent family's important? So they say you can't do that. And I think just the opposite is really true. You need to, you have to. And so, you know, I figured it out. You know what it is for a child raised in a two-parent home with a good, excellent relationship with the father? In a single-parent home, mothers had 30% more likely to go into drugs and alcohol and violence. In a two-parent home, fair to poor relationship with the father is 68% more likely. A child raised in a two-parent home with a good, excellent relationship with the dad, you have to state it in the negative, is 94% less likely to ever go into drugs, alcohol, or violence. That's phenomenal. In other words, it's possible, totally improbable. Will you please hear me? It's not so much the structure, but the relationship within the structure where we're losing our kids. And everybody's so concerned about two-parent families, divorce. I am too. But I'll tell you this. We are losing more kids to truth because of lack of relationships with their daddy right in the most evangelical, fundamental, Bible-centered church than we are with anything that Peter Jennings or anyone has done on television. And I just thank God there's someone like John Hackenberg taking the time and the money, and we need to support him to do what he's doing. It's not so much the structure, but the relationship within the structure. And oh, let me tell you, in Ephesians, when Paul said in Ephesians 6:4, "Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger." In Colossians 3, verse 21, "Fathers, do not exasperate your children." What does it mean to exasperate a child? It says right here, that they may not lose heart. Kids are losing heart theologically. They're losing heart with truth. They're losing heart with marriage. Why? Because they're being provoked. They're losing heart that it's even possible. The Shepherd Pratt Memorial Hospital, Baltimore, Maryland, released a study called The Classroom Avenger Profile. They wanted to find out if there's, how would you call it, a thing that goes through all the shootings, a thread, something that would tie all the shootings together, the last 17 non-traditional shootings in high school. They found two things. Now you think of this crowd right here. They found two things. All the shooters came from middle white class families. You got it? All the shooters came from middle white class families. What do we have here? Middle white class families. The second and only emotional strain they found was this. For the most part, the shooters appeared to come from homes that are functional in the community, but in reality, they were subtly dysfunctional, especially in the relationship with the father. In other words, what it brought out was the father was distant in the parenting process. It's not so much just the structure, but also the relationship within the structure. Let me show you this in research. Now, all this research, everything I have here, you can pull it all down free. Over $350,000 of research you can pull down free, or at least your pastor can, or youth pastor. Just go to www.josh.josh.org and go to where it says Josh Notes Research. And $350,000 of research, all the documentation, everything is all there. Kids who feel close to their families, the research now shows, are so much less likely to ever be violent or to attack others. Teens who have relatively higher parental involvement in their lives are protected from emotional stress, suicide, or a substance abuse. The one of the latest studies by the YMCA says having a close relationship with one's children, spending time with them, is strongly related to whether teens engage in risky behavior such as drinking, fighting, violence, or having sex at an early age. A close relationship with the parents is directly associated with higher grades and greater intention to go to college. It's not so much the structure, but the relationship within the structure. And for years, all the church, and I think so many of the pastors have been afraid to address it because of their own relationship with their own kids. But we said, well, if it's a two-parent family, that's it. Hogwash! That is not the answer. It's not even part of the answer, hardly. Now, don't get me wrong. I believe in a two-parent family. I believe in a two-parent biological family. But if that's what the ultimate that I believed in, I'd be wasting my time with young people. It's the relationship within the structure. It's like this father came to me. He said, Josh, my son is 14. My daughter is 16. And they don't believe anything that I believe. They don't even believe in Jesus anything. He said, I've taken them to church every Sunday. We've had devotional every morning. And we've done this. And finally said, wait a minute. What kind of relationship do you have with your daughter, with your son? That's the one who thought to him. He said, what do you mean? He said, I've taken them to church. I said, if you don't build a relationship with them, one of the worst things you can ever do is take them to church. Church without relationships leads to rebellion. We have such an emphasis. We got to get them into the Word, a good youth group. Get them to church. Get them to devotional. Hang all that up if you don't take time to build a relationship with them. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger. Do not exasperate your children. You want to exasperate a child? Have devotions with them. Take them to church, etc., etc. Never spend time with them. Never build a relationship with them. You'll totally exasperate that child. And except in a rare situation, they'll never follow your faith. Why should they? It's like one little girl said to me the other day. She came up in a youth conference. She said, Mr. McDowell, could you help me? I said, what's the problem? She said, I just want to know my dad. And every time I get close with my dad, Jesus gets in the way. You know what she was saying? She brought out, every time I start to ask dad about himself, we build a relationship, he starts quoting Jesus. See, for most of you men, quoting Jesus is that buffer to never have to be personal with your children. What? You can quote Jesus and God is pleased. No, he's not. It's the relationship. That's where we're losing our children. Look at this. Teenagers, 12 to 14 years old, who do not feel close to their parents. Now, this is what's amazing. You talk to most of those dads and say, oh, I'm close to my son. Talk to the son. I don't even know my dad. Boy, if you want to know what a marriage is like, don't ask the man, ask the woman. If you want to know what the relationship with the kids are, don't ask the father, ask the kids. If you want reality, teenagers 12 to 14 years old who don't feel close to their parents are 300 times more likely to attempt suicide. 15 to 16-year-olds, 400 times more likely they don't feel close to their parents. Not whether they've been taught the scriptures. No, it's the relationship. 17 to 19 years old, 200% more likely to attempt suicide. It's the relationship. Not just the structure. God's intention is the relationship within the structure. Not the relationship, not the structure. The relationship within the structure is a biblical base for teaching truth. Think of this. Nicole, 13 years old, said, Josh, I'm not the product of a divorced household. I don't do drugs. I don't get in trouble. But sometimes I feel like my voice is invisible. When cries for affection from my dad and attention go unheard, it's like a blow to the gut or a slice out of my heart. Patty, 15, said, about 4 months ago, I fell in love. But it wasn't with a person or a thing. It was with God. Josh, you are so right. God loves me, and I know you do too. I just wish my parents did. I feel so worthless. Now, these are all Christians. These are all from Christian homes. Sixteen-year-old Melanie. Dear Josh, I don't want a divorce like my mom's experience. When I shook hands with you and gave you a letter that I wrote you, you gave me a kiss on the cheek. I've got to tell you, it made me feel loved. A kiss on the cheek is a fatherly experience, expression. I've never had a kiss. I wish I had a daddy to call me up and say, honey, I love you. We all make jokes about Michael Jackson, the guy that likes little boys. We smirk when we see some of the pictures of him and all. Many of us are guilty of that. But what's behind it all? A few weeks ago, he was speaking at Oxford University. Now that seems like an oxymoron. He was speaking on his new foundation called Helping the Children. And the whole purpose of the foundation is to get parents to build a relationship with their kids. Now get this, Michael Jackson. He started crying. And he couldn't talk. The crowd was absolutely stunned. And after a number of minutes, he got his composure. Next time you go to rap on Michael Jackson and the jokes and the downputs, you think of what he said. I just wanted a dad. A father who showed me he loved me. My father never did that. He never once said, Michael, I love you. Andy Williams, the shooter in Santee, California. His one friend said he was always telling us how much he hated his father. He also missed his mother, who had moved to South Carolina. He was devastated that his mother wouldn't take him with her. Another friend said Williams always wanted a relationship with his mom. And another friend, Paul Dugan, said, if you were going to talk to Andy like at school, there was a number one rule, don't ever mention his mother. Do you remember seeing on television that Wednesday afternoon? It happened on Monday morning. Wednesday afternoon, he was taken into the court. Not one single person was in that courtroom to be with him. Not his father had visited him once for 30 minutes and didn't even go to the courtroom. His mother was 3,000 miles away in South Carolina. They ought to arrest the parents. I was in Phoenix. I did about, 10, 12, 13 high school assemblies from Monday to Friday. So every noon we had an assembly outdoors. In this one school of 1,700 students, 1,500 students turned up for the assembly outside at lunch break. They had warned me ahead of time there were a group of Gothics on campus who would come to break up the meeting. There was a large boulder there. I stood up in the boulder so it'd be easier to hold the attention of the crowd. Because that's the most difficult thing. Outdoors with all distractions, noontime when you're hungry and thirsty, and you got to go right back into class and you sit there and hear a Christian speak. That's the most difficult situation you can almost ever be in. And I just started to speak, and six Gothics came up, stood about from here to that sign from me. And they just stood there like, oh, I dare you. They had all their black on. Their hairs were every color in the world. They had more studs than you could count in their nose, ears, mouth, lips. I won't mention some of the other places probably. They had all the chains. They had all the tattoos. They had the dog spiked dog collar. They all had the spiked wrist collars. I immediately changed my talk. The crowd didn't know it. I went in to talk about intimacy, which to me as a 16-year-old girl said, intimacy is a capacity to be real with another person. When I finished speaking, I brought Jesus out, opportunity to know him. I stepped down off the rock, and as soon as my feet hit the grass, the head of the Gothics ran up to me and literally ran, just leaped right up to where I was, and the whole crowd of students went, And he came up within 6 inches of my nose. I remember it well because he had buffalo breath. He stood about 6 inches in front of my nose. And what the 1,500 students, his peers in the school, didn't see and hear, they didn't see the tears just coming down his cheeks. And they didn't hear him whisper to me, "Mr. McDowell, would you give me a hug?" Now my hands were at my side because in a very antagonistic situation, you don't put your hands up. You're looking, you leave them down. I've learned that for years. You leave them down so you don't antagonize the antagonistic. And before I could say yes and even lift my hands up, he instantly threw his arms around me in front of the whole school, put his my head on my shoulder and cried like a baby. Seemed like forever because his chains were embedded into my chest. And when he stepped back, what the 1,500 students didn't hear him say, and the next time you go to criticize someone that looks like that, and you think back how many times you've made sly remarks, off-colored remarks, putting them down, degrading them. I mean, they're degrading, you're degrading by the way you talk about them. Think about it in your own life. Thank you all. How many times in front of your children and everything else you put down people like that when you see them? Oh, they ought to be thrown in jail. Ought to be thrown out of school. The next time you even go to think about that, you think of what that young man, 16 years old, said to me. Very politely, he pulled his head back and just bawling, he said, "Mr. McDowell, my father never once ever hugged me or told me he loved me." We're losing our young people not because we're not teaching truth. We're losing them because we're not building relationships with it, starting with our own children, right within the church. "My dearest Mr. McDowell," that's quite a way to start a letter. This is from a 15-year-old, Amber. "I just want someone who will love me and not hurt me. The love of someone who will not hurt me. My father's harsh words have caused me more pain than anything. He has called me a whore, a bitch, a slut. Mr. McDowell, I am none of those. You want to know how I deal with all of this? I usually dress in all black and wear black makeup and call myself a vampire. All I want is love. You want to know why I don't wear black anymore? Because every time I do, my father beats up on me. I'm getting used to it. But I don't want any more pain. No more. I just want to die. They call me Black Rose. Signed, dead in heart, Amber." You think of that the next time you go to criticize some young person looks like that. Behind almost every child's bizarre behavior, there's a hurt by an adult. Almost 100% of the time. So why don't you go find that adult? Criticize the adult! I'm starting to think some of these kids have no chance because they have no relationships, starting with Christians and their own dad in a Christian home. Boy, some of you mothers here know what I'm talking about. A 1994 study, and it's even worse now, of church youth, evangelical church youth. 66% of the kids spent less than 4.5 minutes a day with their father in meaningful conversation. 62% spent less than 8.5 minutes a day with their mother in meaningful conversation. And we call that a Christian home. Amazing. absolutely mind-boggling. And yet most of these homes are ones that we believe in truth. We want to teach truth. We got to stay true to the Scriptures. Well, if you stay true to the Scripture, build a relationship with your son and daughter. That takes time. It takes commitment. It takes emotion. It takes a lot of hurts. Fathers, do not exasperate your children that they may not lose heart. It's 9 o'clock, time for me to close. Tomorrow morning at 8 sharp, for many of you, well, could be the most important talk you ever hear the rest of your life. I don't care how old you are, especially you men. Tomorrow morning, I'm going to lay out in the simplest terms, the simplest way, how do we build relationships with our children that they will accept the truth that all of us have come to this conference to hear about, from Chuck Missler, from Dave Hine, etc. I'll tell you this. You don't build relationships with your sons, your daughters and things. Everything you hear is worthless to you. All it does is make you arrogant. Not significant. And I know one thing. So many people come to conferences and they learn truth, because that way they can kind of satisfy themselves and replace that with what should have been a relationship with their children. We are not losing our children because we don't have notebooks full of truth. We're not losing our children because we don't have books and videos on truth. We're losing our children to truth because we haven't built relationships with them. So tomorrow morning, and I can hardly wait, at 8 sharp. And please, I beg you to bring pencil and paper. Most of us men, we don't like to take notes because we think we have a photographic mind, but we don't have any film. Our wives are the ones that have the photographic mind because they can always remember to say, I told you so, I told you so, I told you so. And they're the ones that take the notes so they can say, I told you so. So please, I beg you in the morning, if you're here, bring notes. Because it can well be one of the most significant elements of truth you will ever hear. And here's the phrase I'm going to spin off of. If you remember nothing more than tonight, and tomorrow morning, you remember this phrase. Truth without relationships lead to rebellion. Truth without relationships leads to rebellion. Or put it this way, rules. Rules without relationships lead to rebellion. And we're not losing our kids because we don't have rules. We're not losing our kids because we don't have truth. We're losing our kids because we haven't built relationships with them. We give them a context to receive truth from you and me. So I look forward to that very much tomorrow morning. Please take to heart what I've shared tonight. There's more believers concerned about truth than they are about building relationships with their own children. And a lot of times we don't because we don't know how. Well, I'll guarantee you this. By 8:57 tomorrow morning, there will be one person here ever the rest of their life will ever be able to say, I didn't know how. I don't care how old your children are or what. I don't care if they're 40 years old. You will never ever be able to say, I didn't know how to build a relationship with my child. And if we can accomplish that by 8:57 in the morning and be the whole worth the whole trip up here from Dallas, please take it to heart. God bless. Okay, turn your minds on this morning. I want to reach your minds and I want to reach your hearts, but through your minds. We want our children to accept the truth that we teach them. We want others to. Truth without relationships lead to rebellion. I think all of us in our hearts really desire Proverbs 6:20-23, where the Word of God says, "My son, obey your father's commands, and don't neglect your mother's teachings. Keep their words always in your heart. Tie them around your neck. Whenever you walk, their counsel can lead you. When you sleep, they will protect you. When you wake up in the morning, they will advise you." And then Proverbs 5 in the New Living Translation, "My son, pay attention to my wisdom. Listen carefully to my wise counsel. Then you will learn to be discreet and store up knowledge." Isn't that what you want for your children, our grandchildren? To obey and to follow the wisdom of the Lord that He wants to pass on through you and me. Well, if we desire that, then all the truth that you have in notebooks and all the videos and all the books will be of little use if you don't build relationships with them. Truth without relationships lead to rebellion. Rules without relationships lead to rebellion. I want to set 4 contexts for what I shared this morning, what I shared last night. First, when it comes to parenting, there is no guarantee. I do not know one single scripture verse in the Bible that guarantees parenting. Please don't bring a child up in a way you should go never depart from it. That is what probably the number one misquoted, misused, out of context verse in the entire Bible. I don't know of any, I'm not saying there's not one there, but I don't know any that guarantees parenting. You can be the finest parent in the world. You can do everything right. You can be the most godly, the most relational, the most loving, the most listening, the most instructional, time available. And you have no guarantee your child won't grow up and look you in the eye and say, "I hate you," or your daughter get pregnant, or your son on drugs. There is no guarantee. But if we do follow the right biblical principles, it gives us such an advantage. When I have parents come to me and they say, "My son or my daughter's just gone off, they left home, ran away, whatever." And they ask me, "Will they come back what?" Boy, that's a hard one. But I know this. When I chat with that parent and I find out they have built a relationship with that child, then I can look them right in the eye confidently and say, "They'll be back. They'll be back." But if that relationship hasn't been building, I can't do that. I can't look them in the eye and say, "They'll be back." It comes down to that. Second, they're never too old. Your children are never too old. I don't care if they're 30, 35, 40, 45 years old to practice these 6 simple principles we're going to look at. And it's never, ever too late. It's never too late. And then this is a very critical point, and this is something that really motivated me as a parent. I have 3 daughters and a son, 27 in medical school, 25 in seminary, 21 a senior at Auburn University, and a 16-year-old that has stolen her daddy's heart, a sophomore in high school. I am not responsible for my children. I am not. If I thought I was responsible for my children, I would go out of my mind. I'd have pulled my hair out a long time ago. I don't see in the scriptures where we're responsible for our children at all. However, I am responsible to my children. I'm not responsible for them. They're God's children. I am responsible to my children. You say, "What do you mean by that?" I'm responsible to love them, to be there, to love their mother, to model Jesus for them. I'm responsible to teach them. I'm responsible to bring them up in the love and instruction of the Lord. I'm responsible to care for them, to educate them. I'm responsible to my children. But what they do with that is not my responsibility. It's not my responsibility.